Last week we heard that gospel passage that was right in the middle of Mark's gospel, and it marks the dividing line between the early life of Christ and the later life of Christ. And the specific turning point was the announcement of his death and resurrection. The Son of Man must be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes and put to death and then rise again on the third day. And Peter, speaking for all of us, resisted that and said, no, we won't let them do that to you. And today we have the second prediction of the Passion in Mark's Gospel. So it follows closely on what was said last week. But in the several announcements of the Passion that Jesus gives in Mark's Gospel, each time he invites his disciples into a deeper understanding of what that means. And this is a mystery about all of life that is embedded into the scriptural message, the message of salvation, and it is embodied in the person and in the body of Jesus of Nazareth. And we call that mystery the Paschal mystery, from the Greek word pasch, which is a translation of the Hebrew word Passover, and it's the Passover from death to life. That strange, if hard, truth about all of life, which is that everything must die in order to rise. It's in nature. Everything was created by God and comes from God and reflects God in its own way. And so nature falls in the fall and resurrects in the spring. We just see it all around us, the dying and rising pattern of all existence. And the difference between us humans and the rest of creation is that the rest of creation reflects God involuntarily. It just does because it comes from God and reflects God. It doesn't have any choice in that. We humans, we have intelligence, we have soul, we have the ability to be consciously aware of that pattern of dying and rising, and we have the freedom to choose it. But sin would encourage us to push it away, to deny it, to do the opposite of embracing death and resist it. And so throughout the human history, there have been various denials of this Paschal mystery. Searching for the fountain of youth would be an example. You know, taking pills and using cosmetics and dyeing our hair. I've tried that, it didn't work. You know, pushing death away. And St. James, in that second reading, gets really at the heart of this problem. He says, you live in strife, even in the Christian community, not just the world, but in the Christian communities, talking to some Christians. And he says, you are divided by strife and war because each of you is a slave to his or her passions. You are more worried about your own wants and desires than you are about the needs of the body, of the community. And therefore, you're never going to have peace. Peace comes from God. God is peace. And it's Paschal. Each of the three persons of the Trinity are laying down their lives for the other two. They are making themselves vulnerable and available without any reservations to the other two. And that's what makes peace possible. It's so different from the world. In the world, treaties, peace treaties between nations and tribes, are always bilateral. I will do this for you if you will do that for me. I will go this far if you will come that far. But I'm not going to make myself vulnerable to you. We're going to have to agree on these terms before either of us is going to sign it. Jesus shows us what God looks like, how God thinks, and it's unilateral. And so Jesus just makes himself vulnerable. God, the author of it all, makes himself vulnerable, puts himself out there so that he gets taken advantage of, and it leads to the cross. And that's why we don't want to go there. That's why Peter speaks so well for us. We don't want to think about that. And in fact, you know, a day or two later, the disciples are walking down the road arguing among themselves about who's the greatest. And Jesus says, you just don't get it, do you? It's about being the least. It's about becoming the servant of all, putting the needs of others before your own, not guarding your self or your possessions or your privileges and rights, but being willing to give them up so that peace, the peace of God, might happen. And the words of the Book of Wisdom that we heard as our first reading are a hint at what can happen. Let us beset the just one, they say. He makes us uncomfortable. He accuses us of our transgressions against God's law. He makes us look bad. And rather than our transforming and becoming more loving and divine and godlike, let's just kill him and get rid of the problem. That's not 4,000 years ago in Old Testament times. That's now. Isn't that always the issue? If you are going to act like God in this world, people are going to misunderstand. They might hate you. They might make fun of you. They might kill you. That's why we put a cross up in every Catholic church. It's a reminder that that's where we're all headed. We're all headed to death. But the reason we put that up there is because we can look on that and that reality, that truth, and know that death isn't the end of the story. The end of the story is resurrection. But you can't get to the resurrection without going through the death. And that's why we put the font, which is the death, dying with Christ in baptism, drowning, on the way to the altar. Because you can't get to the altar of glory and the meal of the kingdom without going through the death of baptism. And that's why we gather around an altar that's not only a fellowship meal of the kingdom, but it's also an altar of sacrifice. It's a memory of what he did on the cross. And in the Eucharistic prayer, we all say that acclamation every time. When we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim your death, O Lord, until you come again. And we can confidently proclaim his death and remember it and associate ourselves with it because he's coming again. The coming again is the resurrection. It's the final resolution of all things and its union with God and its joy and its glory. But you don't get there without embracing the reality of the Paschal mystery.